Bill Benson has been one of the most important freedom pioneers of the 20th century. Since the early 80s, he has single-handedly driven a powerful wedge into the presumed validity of the federal income tax and the IRS. He'll tell you the story of his extensive research trip to the capital cities of all 48 states to assemble the evidence that the 16th Amendment to the Constitution was never ratified. His 17,000 certified notarized documents present incontrovertible legal proof that the income tax and the IRS have no basis in law. He's persisted in his crusade in spite of great pressure against him, enduring severe treatment in federal prison, and ignoring all attempts to call him off by threat or bribe. His story is both shocking and inspiring. I'm joined in my interview with him here by Claudia Hermer.
What I'd like to start with is the history of how you got involved in this research regarding the 16th Amendment.
I was a former investigator for the Criminal Investigation Division for the Illinois Department of Revenue. And in that position, it was my duty and responsibility to collect the excise tax, not the direct tax. There was a great deal of corruption that went on within that department. And we had one case that was worth $3 million. And the attorneys for the state sold that case and settled that case for $250,000. That ruffled my feathers. And I went to the director of the Department of Revenue, and he said, "Bill, why don't you just shut your mouth and take the money like everyone else does? Take the envelope, let him put it in your car, let him put it at the table when you're having lunch or wherever. But remain silent." I tell him, "I'm sorry, I wasn't raised that way, nor do I intend to do it. You have the wrong guy for the job if you want me to take money and to take bribes. No, thank you." He said, "If you don't remain silent, I shall fire you." I said, "You might as well do it like yesterday, because if you do, the day you fire me, I shall sue you for violation of First Amendment rights." And we both kept our word. The director of the Illinois Department of Revenue fired me, and I then sued him. I had an attorney in Chicago, and just myself, the two of us, worked against the largest law firms in the city of Chicago. It took us 6.5 years to get into court before a jury of six in a civil case. The jury found in my favor and awarded me $350,000 for violation of First Amendment rights and for the dismissal and firing of me from my position. That was back in the 1970s.
What led to the research regarding the 16th Amendment?
When I was fired, I never say dismissed because I was fired, and I did sue and I did win, I began to work with the attorney that had my case. We had an income tax case in the state of Indiana. It was a willful failure to file case. We had about 300 pages of documentation that I obtained from a man by the name of Martin Beckman. Martin Beckman got that documentation from a man by the name of Dean Hirsch from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dean had called the various secretaries of state, written them letters asking them for the research work on the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The answer came back from the various states that we are not going to do your legal research. If you want it, come to the states and get it. Dean didn't go to the states and get it, nor did Martin Beckman. During the course of the trial, we made an attempt to use the 300 pages that I purchased from Martin Beckman. Beckman got the documentation from Dean Hirsch, copied it, put it in file folders with the name of the states on each file folder. There was only one state that caught my eye, and that was the state of Kentucky. On February the 8th, of 1910, on page 487 of the Senate Journal, the Senate was in session and they were voting on the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution. There were 9 senators that voted for the amendment and 22 that voted against. I asked the attorney, because I was sitting at the conference table with them as the paralegal, to make sure that we try to get this documentation before the court let the jury see it. And we did that. We had Martin Beckman come in from Billings, Montana, to testify in that case as far as the documents that he obtained. He never told us that he got the documentation from Dean Hirsch. I didn't find that out till a long time later, probably a couple of years or so later. The judge said that the thing that we needed to make our case was the documentation must be certified, it must be notarized, and you must have a witness to testify to. Mr. Beckman was not a witness to testify to because he did not do the work. So the judge permitted Mr. Beckman to testify, but then he struck his testimony, and when he finished testifying, he then ordered him removed from the courtroom. And, of course, the documentation was not entered into evidence, nor was it seen by the jury. The jury deliberated in that case for about 45 minutes and found the defendant guilty of willful failure to file a tax return. And after that case was concluded, we had dinner that evening, and I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, the judge has given us our marching orders. The only thing we have to do is go to all 48 states and get the documentation certified and notarized. And the attorney says, Bill, you're crazy. You can't do that. I says, of course. We can go to all 48 states, but we have to find the funds that will support a project like that. It was very fortunate for us that there was a man by the name of George Sitka, who I wrote about in Volume 1 of The Law That Never Was, because George called and said, do you mind if I come to Chicago and talk to you about what you want to do? I said, not at all. When George arrived in Chicago within a couple of days, he said, how come you're not on the road like now? I said, George, we lack funds. He said, you have an open checkbook. He said, so now you can get on the road like tomorrow. I said, no, it'll take a couple of weeks, but if we have an open checkbook, I'm on my way.